Hi everyone, this is Tony Holbein from Growblogs. You are listening to the Revenue Formula with Mikkel and Tony. Is RevOps broken? From being seen as a glorified system admin to underinvestment, it kind of feels like it. Today, we're joined by Jeff Ignacio to figure out how we can fix it. Enjoy.
So also, you know, so maybe this is like crying on a very high level. So we have an au pair. Yeah. Like my wife and I, we have an au pair, right? Because, hey, you know, why not? But guess what? She just quit right now. Like, I just got a text message. Our au pair quit. Whom does au pair quit on? I mean, it's like, is it really bad?
Yeah.
No,
I hope she gave you a 4-week resignation or 2 weeks.
Yeah, it is 4 weeks, but it's still like...
Have you not done any capacity planning at home? Like making sure you had the next one
ready for ramp? No, my attrition model was on track, but it's like, you know, it's sometimes with an N of one, it's like you're on 0.7789.
Well, they always say it's about the working environment, so I don't know what your house looks like.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's right. I could show you a picture. There's like 20, no, not 20, but like 5 construction site workers right now building in a staircase.
So basically everything in your household is a mess is what you're telling us.
It sounds like a hazard.
But hey, well, work is good. But work is good.
Work is good. My colleagues are great.
I feel like this is all the intro
we
now.
We should have recorded.
We are recording. Okay. Oh, yeah. Ahead of me. This is just going to get like sliced in and then jump cut. Yeah. So that's perfect.
Yes. Okay.
So the voice.
So Mikkel, whom do we have here today?
Yeah, the voice in the other end you probably heard is our friend Jeff Ignacio. Welcome, Jeff. Thanks so much for joining.
Hi, Jeff.
Hey, guys. Thank you for having me.
So you're head of GTM and Ops and Growth at Regrow, and you run the Substack called RevOps Impact. Go check that out, definitely. And you're advisor to a bunch of companies, among others, Scratchpad and Sona. So suffice it to say, you talk with a lot of RevOps as yourself.
I think I do spend a lot of time with a lot of folks in RevOps, and I would say everyone has a different title. Some folks have sales analytics, sales planning, marketing operations, CS operations, but I think if you can put everyone under a big tent, we just call it RevOps.
Yeah, I mean, when Tony started, this is the running joke, there were two options on the table. It was either revenue operations or commercial operations. And
the role in this company still is commercial operations to this day. And it also became kind of popular in Copenhagen that it was commercial operations. And yeah, let's just say I was wrong.
We have you to thank for that.
I'm not the right one to name anything.
All of Denmark doing tomorrow. Yeah. But anyway, so what, you know, the reason to get you on the show was really, we share this common interest on revenue operations, and there's a lot of things happening at the moment in revenue operations. Last year, I believe it was the fastest growing job title. Forrester is citing that, you know, this function is pivotal to influence revenue growth and retention. And a lot of companies see the benefits they can gain from such a function. Mm-hmm. I think what we've noticed is a lot of the RevOps, they become CRM admins, do a lot of Python validation rules. And what we wanted to talk with you about is what are some of the signs that is fundamentally broken and how do we go about, you know, making RevOps have an impact? So you kind of promised to do some homework and bring some points on, hey, here's where it's really dire.
No pressure.
Here's where it's really dire. So why don't we just hop straight into it? What's the first thing you've seen?
Well, I think the very first thing that I've seen is that a company treats their revenue operations function as this order taker or a bit of a ticketing office. So I have this field, I need inputted. Hey, just one more thing. Send a ticket down the queue. Hey, I need this report. I need this dashboard. I saw your commercial actually with the report and dashboard. That is so on point because you can't imagine how many shoulder taps you get in a week around a Slack message or an email. Like, hey, I needed this report. I need you to tell me, double click into this. I know this cohort, what's the retention rate of this cohort from, you know, 22 years ago? I'm like, wait, hold on a second. Our data doesn't even go back that far. And if we do, we're going to have to go caveat and asterisk that the data has to be clean. So that's the first thing I see is that we treat the revenue operations function as this administrative back office when it can be elevated because it has a pulse on what's happening across the entire org. And you can get some greater insights if you empower your revenue operations organization.
I think to a degree, right? I think to a degree, it's actually understandable, right? I'm also trying to kind of see it from the other side because, you know, some of the reasons why you know, I was hired, I had a job, and it's probably the same thing for you, Jeff, was, yes, you were running the CRM, right? I think that's it started there. And I think for a lot of folks on the ground that maybe aren't that super educated in all strategic revenue operations, what can you do? If you ask them in the middle of the night, you know, what does RevOps do? And then they wake up and it's like, CRM. and you know, kind of that is still ingrained. So I think many, many times when people have some issue, and to a degree, I think we in RevOps also enjoy it, we become the go-to person for all kinds of different things, right? And then it's so easy to not say no and just say yes and, hey, let me kind of fix this for you and let me jump on this and let me do this. I think it's also coming from the history of, you know, how this role even came to be. The question really becomes kind of, how do you break out of this, right? How do you move beyond and also potentially in some cases even change the image that you have internally?
I think there's a couple things. And first of all, you know, in the middle of my sleep, the first word I'm going to blurt out is CRM. So people are going to wonder, like, oh, it must be on his mind all day, every day. He talks about it in his sleep. But I think the one thing you can do is, you know, the operators who are in seat, they have to take some responsibility as well and an ability to learn and develop in the role. I think many folks who are in the operations function can have a bit of an engineering mindset, because you know, they're so good at process improvement, thinking through, you know, step A, then step B, then step C. But I think what we can do as a profession is start to figure out, you know, what is in it for our stakeholders and how do our stakeholders want to be communicated to? So there's a little bit of art and science, and not a lot of folks talk about this all the time. It's, let's talk about how we can, you know, improve this flow or improve this apex code. That's not what the stakeholders want to hear. They want to hear, well, what do I take away from this? What am I driving improvement from? And then how do you communicate is important as well. So do you communicate in a sprint or a newsletter that goes out detailing every little thing that you've tackled throughout the week? Almost nobody cares. What you want to do is, you know, succinctly tell folks, here are the improvements that we're making. Now, if you care for the details, here's all the detail. And if you want to set some time with me, I'm happy to walk you through it. But you're going to get fewer clicks to get to where you want to go. You're going to have a better layout of information to see what you need to see. And we're in the spirit of taking requests and to find out how we can further improve the organization. So those are the ways that I think revenue operations can elevate, is to really start thinking through, how can I communicate better and more effectively? And then on the reporting side, figuring out the takeaways and then imagining and predicting, you know, what your stakeholders are going to ask ahead of time. So they might ask the forecast. Well, okay, last week we asked these three or four fundamental questions throughout the forecast repeatedly through all the AEs. Well, I'm just going to, you know, head my CRO or my head of sales off at the pass. And I'm going to start answering those questions ahead of time with the insights that I can see from the reports.
And I think kind of a very common, you know, you could say, explanation or good reason, or maybe also excuse, why RevOps is sometimes, you know, stuck in this is, oh, I need someone else to come in and manage the CRM for me so I can be more strategic and do more other stuff, right? So this, it's also a, where does the flow of the money go in the organization, right? So while the money doesn't, you know, go into revenue operations, maybe that's one of the problems, but where do you see this money being sent to in other cases, which maybe is kind of the root cause maybe for this issue here?
Well, I don't envy the CRO's job either, right? They have a role that is just as busy and their plate is immensely full. And so one of the first reasons for why you want to make a hire is to take something off your plate. And sure, CRM is one of the easiest things to take off your plate. The next is going to be, okay, well, I need someone to do the math, to start looking at the TAM and really start thinking through all the little details around how many of our customers do expand and when do they expand? Are there particular segments that have shown tremendous awareness and interest that we're not looking at? Are there some ancillary use cases coming through the wind channel that tell us maybe there's some repositioning of messaging and narrative? So, you know, these type of insights, you know, one person can't handle alone, especially for early stage CROs. Early stage CROs are not just, you know, leaders, they're also jumping into deals. They're not jumping into deals late either. They're probably there in the middle of the deal, pre-proposal, especially if it's a strategic account with a strong, you know, appreciation for an executive stakeholder. And so these CROs, you know, we can make a joke that RevOps is glorified go-to-market IT. Well, in some ways, we can also joke that the CRO is a glorified sales leader as well, because they're jumping in and becoming super sales rep. So I totally get the idea of taking something off the CRO's plate, and that's where the budget comes from to fund a new headcount.
And maybe kind of, you know, to kind of go one more step in that direction. So, I mean, there's this whole talk about growth at all costs is over, go-to-market fit is broken for all these SaaS companies and so forth. So what's your, you know, hindsight 2020 perspective here on, well, if RevOps would have had a stronger role in those organizations, do you think that some of that crazy investment in sales and marketing, for example, because this is where the money went, right, kind of wouldn't have happened like that or would have happened in a smarter way? Or kind of what's your perspective on that?
I thought that's taking a lot of credit for RevOps. I would say no. If you had RevOps sprinkled in, magically this company would have had, you know, superior unit economics. No, I think it's a shared responsibility across leadership. Also, the incentives were different back then. Just 2 years ago, companies were incentivized to grow top line. And the fastest way to achieve top line was, you know, to go surge headcount and surge programmatic spend. And so to pump the brakes because we're in a paradigm shift is a tremendous change in mindset and also in experience. How many operators today, you know, in their 20s and 30s have seen a down market? Almost nobody. And so now we have to adapt pretty quickly. So everyone who has been operating in the environment of the last 10 years have had to fundamentally shift to finding paths, you know, quote unquote, productive growth. And a lot of people had that playbook in their experience. And so that's where critical thinking, taking risk, and really assessing, you know, what are some of the best practices that we think we can enable that we haven't seen that are going to help enable us to get that productive growth. So having RevOps, I think, could have helped for sure. But I think it's a shared responsibility across multiple functions. The CRO themselves, the CMO, the CFO, the CEO. And we were playing a different game the last couple of years. And I think fundamentally, the request for growth at all costs is no longer here.
I mean, it kind of plays into one of the other. So when we connected previous to hitting record, one of the points was really on this overinvesting in sales and marketing and some of the problems that can happen. Can you maybe tell us a bit more about that?
Well, I think there's a couple of symptoms that you hear today. So I think David Spitz at Benchsites has been touting this metric called net new. I forget what he calls it, but essentially total sales and marketing expense divided by net new ARR. So it's essentially a symptom quarter over quarter of, you know, what is the incremental cost of the new quarter's net revenue. And what you're finding is that metric has moved up and to the right, and not in a good way. It's moved from 150% about 6 quarters ago to close to 240% today, which means that for every dollar of net new ARR coming in, you're spending $2.40. And so what that portends is that either we just got worse at acquiring new customers, which I think a lot of sellers, I don't think they're getting worse. I don't think we've discovered amnesia in selling, but I think that the demand for buying products has dried up. It's slowed down. And that's why you see that customer acquisition costs increase dramatically. Now, does that mean that's probably artificially capped because of CFO mandates, cost mandate to cut the discretionary 20%? I think there's a little bit of that going on. The demand to buy is probably still there, but it's being suppressed by these buyer caps. Now, who knows when that buyer cap is going to get lifted? Perhaps companies will say, you know, the underlying problems of why we needed these tools still exist. When the wallets open up, we are still going to spend. And that's what I'm betting on. I think that demand is still there. Now, I think companies can get ahead of it by finding dancing partners. You're seeing it now with SalesLoft and Drift starting to create these super apps. And all these super app companies are now offering, you know, value with a bundle. So it passes some savings, hopefully, on theoretically to their customers like myself. And then we as operators can get a bunch of stuff in the warehouse, a bunch of stuff in the product belt that would then say, I can pay, you know, instead of a dollar for a dollar, I'm spending maybe 85 cents on the dollar and I'm getting a 15% saving. So I think there's some, hopefully, some bundling or value that's going to come out of these M&As that are happening today.
What would be so let's just say there's a, you know, there's a RevOps listening, he or she doing a lot of work in the CRM maybe here. And let's just talk specifically this overinvestment in sales and marketing and the issues that are coming out of this and, you know, the whole environment, and it's super complex for people to fully grasp, right? And I think you obviously kind of have your head wrapped around this. Is there like a simple advice you can give those folks? Like, hey, this is how you maybe can help your CRO or help your VP of sales, you know, help maybe even your CEO you know, to navigate this thing or provide a perspective on from a RevOps perspective, right? Do you have like one or two things that you can share here?
I try to let unit economics guide me. So every time I run a CAC analysis, you'll inevitably find that even if you cut 10% of tech spend, you're not really going to put a dent in the CAC, right? Because, you know, the biggest expense is going to be on the headcount. And so the easiest way to make your unit economics work for you is to make that headcount productive. And so you can make that headcount productive in a couple of ways. One, if you need a smaller footprint of a sales organization, that may be the case. But I would also say you wouldn't want to start the enablement function because you need that team to ensure that they're utilizing the best skills every day to hopefully bring in those win rates back up in line. The second thing is taking a look at your existing customer base. So if you have enough to cross-sell and upsell, or just to even retain your customers, that's going to take a lot of pressure off a new sales number. So if you can find a path to generating revenue from your existing customer base, I think that's a common answer that we're hearing these days is, you know, renew is the new, and expansion is something more favorable. So cost of expansion, at least for 2024 or 2025, is also going to be another unit economic metric to take a look at. So there's cost of acquisition for new customers, then there's the cost of expansion. How much does it cost you to go get an incremental dollar? Now, if you can grow the expansion, that's just going to take the pressure off, like I said earlier, off a new business number. And we've seen what it takes to get new business in. It takes $2.40 on average. And so if you can cut into that number, that's going to help the org tremendously. The second thing is, you know, probably improve your ICP and your targeting. So in the old days, when you had a ton of headcount, you probably were selling to almost everybody. And so what you want to do is narrow down your TAM to the addressable set of folks that would benefit from your product today. And the easiest way to look at that is going to be momentum and win rates in your pipeline, segmenting by certain cuts of the data. Industry, region, technographics, that type of information is going to help you lead the way to being more specific.
And especially something like this, right? ICP targeting. I mean, this is, who are you RevOps talking about this stuff, right? I mean, it's, you know, it's a, that is way more strategic than yes, sure, you will probably be the person being leaned on, you know, pulling the data, doing the analysis and so forth. But triggering something like this because you sit on that data set, I think that, you know, and then coming with suggestions, you know, that stem from the data, I think that can be hugely impactful for not only the business, but also how the rest of the organization potentially looks at you, right? Another thing that I think you and I kind of see a lot, Jeff, is the way these go-to-market engines are kind of planned, the way this thing is being laid out, new year, new Excel spreadsheet, and let's go. Kind of what are the pitfalls that they're seeing there most of the time?
So hopefully folks have finished their annual plan. I know a lot of folks can have dozens of versions of their plan before it's finalized. I joke often, the first time I ever finished an annual plan when I worked in finance was that we had a V22. And then that wasn't the final file. The final file was V22 final in all caps. But there was a V22 with lower cap final, just to show you the evolution. That, like, nothing's really, really final final until someone puts it in all caps. But that final edition of the plan had a couple of things. It showed us what the potential plan was going to be by quarter, by month, by what channels, and it gave the different teams across the company their targets. So marketing had their MQL targets or their opportunity targets. Influence or source, however you want to track it, for the sales organization, how much headcount they're going to have, how much quota each person is going to carry, and then what accounts or territories they're going to sell into. So one of the pitfalls of the annual plan is not rolling it out fast enough, not communicating, you know, the goal for the year, and then rallying the team to achieve that goal. And then, quite simply, hiring too late. Some folks can hire the team too late, and everyone knows this. If you have a sales-led model, the reps ramp, and you're gonna. If you hire too late, you're gonna eat into some significant time of achieving your number. The second thing is the marketing plays. You want to make sure that your marketing campaigns run effectively, according to plan, and are targeting the right personas to be able to generate the right type of leads to the top of the funnel.
Yeah, I mean, it was so funny. At some point, we were looking into all the capacity planning stuff in particular, and it was like, if you account for ramp and attrition, you are super sophisticated. But it's so critical for this motion to account for what's going to happen in the future. And I know we've also talked about the fact that if you are hiring too late, then actually, by default, the hiring plan no longer fits. I mean, maybe you had planned, you know, 2 SDRs and 1 AE, but those numbers now, they're not going to get you home, right? So I think that's the other side of the coin. And I think what I have experienced as a pain being on the receiving end as a CMO VP marketing is you get very little say in how those numbers change in the spreadsheet. And all of a sudden, there's some kind of a conversion rate that's moved from, let's just say, 8 to 10%. And it's only 2 percentage points, right? But it's a massive leap all of a sudden to have such an efficiency gain. And you only find out about it, you know, maybe Q1 during the QBR when you're behind, right? So how should RevOps actually facilitate connecting finance and the go-to-market teams to ensure that, for everyone's sake, that this plan, it is likely to happen if we do a really great job?
I always love the assumption uplifts that are in the model, right? Yeah. So for example, the 8% to 10%, that's not a 2% improvement. That's a 25% improvement, right? Yeah. So you're talking about a paradigm shift, a lift on all of your channels. So is LinkedIn, is Facebook, is your social, is that going to lift 25 points? Okay, well, I might be able to lift it if I have narrower targeting. But then you also have to squeeze a little bit of the bid costs, right? What's the bid ask for the keywords that you normally bid on? So on the demand gen side, you might see a ballooning of costs as well. It's not just a 2% improvement, but I don't know if your model shows what's a cost per opportunity improvement. Cost per improvement also goes down 10%. So you're telling me that we're going to not only have higher conversion, but we're also going to have a compression of cost for our opportunities generated from marketing. I think one of the challenging things is. Spreadsheet magic, right? And the way magic comes in not just marketing, but in sales. In sales, it'll be something like, well, last year we ramped reps on a 9-month schedule, and this year we're going to do it on a 4-month schedule. Why? Because we brought in Jeff, and we brought in the enablement person, and magically they're going to ramp twice as fast. We're also going to shrink our sales cycle from 190 days to 130 days. Why? Because we have this deal matrix pricing sheet now. People aren't going to have to negotiate with each other internally to get something approved. We're going to cut 60 days off the sales cycle. Okay, well, is that believable? Is that not? And so that's where the work begins. We have a plan with the numbers. The numbers belie process improvements across the org or initiatives. And will those initiatives pay off in the way you think they will? If they don't pay off, well, you're not going to capture the upside or even the model number in your plan. You actually might fall to the low side. And maybe you didn't even account for the low side in your model. So one thing to be careful of is, don't be too aggressive in your assumptions. If you believe you can be aggressive, have a good justification why. But otherwise, I think one of the things is you want to think through, how could you achieve those improvements in the first place? Sales cycle, win rate, deal size, channel cost, cost per opportunity, channel optimization, conversion rates. Those things we can put in the spreadsheet, and they can be quite reckless if you're not in touch with the sales and marketing team. The sales and marketing team can fundamentally tell you, here are the boundaries and the limits of what I think we can achieve based on these initiatives that we roll out next year. And one thing as a revenue operator, if you tell me that we're going to change your qualification criteria, it's not a 1-week project. That's like a 1-month, 2-month project, because you have to, not only document it, you have to roll it out and then change the behavior of the organization. That takes a couple of weeks at the minimum.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we also had Dave Kellogg on the show at one point talking about, well, they had multi-year plans to move some of these efficiency metrics. Because that's how you needed to look at it. It's not going to be like whip a magic wand. You do one project and it succeeds. Like it's rarely how it works out. So,
but I got to say, I'm also understanding the finance side, honestly. I get it. The job to be done for them is do a budget, do it, right? I need this budget. And they're really trying hard to figure this out and match it and so forth. And they're getting those sometimes impossible to achieve numbers. First of all, growth needs to look like this, but you only have so much in the bank and you need to have so much left in the bank. Kind of those are the guardrails they've been given, basically. And I can totally see, because they're not the one needing to deliver the plan, right? We know this, and this is, again, you know, not their job, not their fault. But then basically kind of, it's so easy to spend time in the model to tweak things in between in order to make this thing work out, right? So I also understand that. And I also understand the right way to do it is really the full-on bottom-up. Those are the initiatives we're going to run. That's what we're expecting to come out of this. But also kind of impossible to pull off for one reason. You might know what you want to do in the next 2-3 months. I think you might want to, you know, you might know that. And let's just live in a world where you say like, hey, we're going to roll out this pricing matrix or this discounting hierarchy, and we can actually accurately predict how the ACV lift is going to end up or the sales cycle lift is going to end up, whatever it's going to be. The problem is then also, well, what about the second half of the year, right? No one has any clue about the initiatives. I mean, no one is maybe kind of too extreme, but it's really difficult to have a clue about the initiatives in the second half of the year, even in Q2, right? Mm-hmm. Do you have like any tip there? Do you have like a magic wand, Jeff, kind of that you can like, oh yeah, no, Tony, this is actually kind of how you do it. Is there anything like this where you can like, hey, this is how I've solved this problem or solved this problem in the past?
I would say first, I have empathy for the finance organization. If the finance organization is strategic, they're just like go-to-market operations. They're going to be embedded talking to sales and marketing. They're going to hopefully have a good sense. But at the same time, they're in a rock and a hard place. They have to protect and grow the enterprise value. If enterprise value growth isn't on the table, then survival of the business as a going concern is important as well. I think the cohorts of 2021, 2022, a lot of those VC-funded companies were told to, you know, make sure cash runway gets to 2025. And guess what? We're getting closer and closer to 2025. And if they haven't been able to achieve that inflection point, these companies probably will not have a funding opportunity to at the valuations they're looking for. So either you're looking at a down round or you're looking to operate with the cash flow from operations as is.
Yeah.
So totally get it. But at the same time, if you go into a business and the number is a number that seems unrealistic, you might try to do a replan, but you also committed to the organization. So go and achieve it no matter what it takes. And so that's the job of leadership, to try to achieve impossible things. But so when I'm thinking about working in the second half of the year, the initiatives, there's two types of things that I think a RevOps leader can have at their disposal. One is a couple of things. So there's the company OKRs, the targets, and you work backwards from there. And these are annual targets, annual goals. So you have your objectives, your key results, and then I like to use another letter for initiatives after that to start detailing all the hypotheses of what we think we can unveil within the org. Now, what ends up happening is those initiatives, you generally try to t-shirt size them and put them in the right place on the roadmap. So they might fall into Q1 or Q2. No one wants to see their initiative hit Q3, Q4. So you're probably going to see the first half of the year pretty condensed. And what ends up happening is if you don't plan properly, you'll take on too many strategic projects that are over the capacity of the enablement and the operations organization. And some of those projects are either going to become delayed, deprecated, de-scoped, or rolled over. And that's why some of the projects that you have in H1 are actually H2 projects, but you're trying to squeeze everything in H1, H2.
I mean, it would be so much easier if all could just get done Q1.
I needed this yesterday. Where's that lead score? I asked for
a degree, right? So one hot take. I hate the word hot take or the phrase, by the way. But you know, one unpopular opinion here could also be scrap this annual planning thing. Actually.
Yeah, just do rolling.
So I mean, to a degree, I think for the budget you will need to have an annual budget. I don't think it makes. I mean, this is just how the world works, right? But I think I think in the budget you can have assumptions that at least should get a recognition by the go-to-market leadership team. It's like, yep, okay, I understand. You know, for this to work out, I need this number to move up. I think there needs to be a bit of a handshake on both sides. Neither finance nor go-to-market leadership can be completely safe. Both of them need to be a little bit, you know, on the risk side, basically, right? And you know, finding that balance, I think, is difficult. But then on the flip side, also figuring out what you want to do in H2, that will probably happen in May or June, right? It will not happen in December. Kind of that's I think kind of the reality that many people are kind of running into. And then you get into this duality of, hey, here's a plan, but here's also our forecast or projection or whatever you want to call that thing, right? Kind of, I think those you almost need to, you know, the bottom up will keep evolving while the top down will stay as is almost, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, to a degree, I think this can be a way to navigate this.
But I think it also changes as you grow. Like the closer you get to some kind of, hey, this smells like IPO, you need to get way more predictable versus if you're early stage.
Yeah, everyone is having that problem right now.
Yeah, ooh, yeah, that's like
we're about to IPO.
All the IPOs.
Sorry, we're busy with the S1. So, sorry, can't talk to you.
So we had Klaviyo and then I think that's it. No, yeah.
Yeah. Well, show me where so these IPOs are. Where are they hiding? Because the IPO market has been shut down, I think.
Yeah. So... you had another. Let's move to the next.
Yes.
Let's move to the next, right? Enough of the planning. One of the things you also wrote, kind of conversely to overinvestment, was underinvestment.
Oh, well, show me where you're getting this headcount for revenue operations teams, and I'll tell you that you're not underinvesting in RevOps.
So what is the problem here, right? So I think, you know, it's it. You kind of said, well, it's either that it happens too late or just it doesn't happen. And then there are even things just on general capacity. But let's talk a bit about the ramifications of underinvesting as a go-to-market team. What are some of the things you see there where revenue operations actually should be able to go in and help out?
Yeah, a couple of things that I've seen. I generally operate in the Series B, Series C space. So these companies generally have brought in, you know, very technical revenue operations teams before they've brought me on board. And I find my skill set to be somewhat in between. Someone that works on the strategy side and someone that works on the technical side. And so generally what I've come in, I've seen a couple of types of mistakes. One, you've overhired and you've brought in the wrong type of individual, which is complete opposite of what we were talking about. And what that means is you brought in someone from a big company and you bring them into Series B, Series C, where quite frankly, a lot of the processes are not documented. They're not well put in place. And the tools have not been well optimized, nor do you really understand, you know, the TAM, the strategy side of the business. So you bring in that heavy hitting resource from a bigger company, and they're going to find that they're going to have to roll up their sleeves, and they may not have been in that position for a very long time. So that's one mistake that I see. Second mistake is believing that you hire a superhero, someone that can pretty much do it all, and you're putting that person in a position where they're quite frankly working 60 to 80 hour weeks, and they're doing that for months on end, and that person's at significant risk of burnout. And you know they're not going to tell you that, but behind the scenes, I can tell you that the folks that I talk to who are in those roles, a lot of them are burned out, and they can only do it for so long. And so when they're asking for help, they're asking for headcount or bringing in a team, and they're not able to get it. Well, that's just one, a belief from the company that they're not willing to further invest in the function or further invest in that individual. Even though they put all their hopes and dreams on that one individual because, quite frankly, they're doing a great job. So there's a bit of a dichotomy there where the better you do as a solo person or a team of two or team of three, they can do it all. Well, that team's got it really well covered. We don't need to further invest. That's one area. The third mistake that I've seen is hiring too late, right? So I've seen a couple of instances where you log in and the admins of the tool are the heads of sales, the CEO. And number one, you see, okay, well, we've got a lot of hands in the cookie jar and those folks should be working on other things across the business. There's a higher and better value use of their time than, you know, putzing around in the CRM or the marketing automation platform. And so those are a couple of mistakes that I've seen in terms of underinvestment in operations.
So the second one totally rings true. I mean, this is basically where the RevOps person, where the organization has all of those expectations for this RevOps person, but then they step in and they actually, you know, for a year deep into janitor mode, just kind of cleaning up basically before they can do anything on top, right? And this is really the problem of this is you hire this person around, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 million to get ready for, you know, moving to 20. But really that person won't be able to contribute much, just fix things behind the scene until you, I don't know, way into this journey already. And then they're not really helpful, right? But in the other example, what's your approach to get more headcount approved, right? And I don't want to say CEOs or CROs or kind of whoever owns that kind of budget are inhumane and just like, I don't care about your, you know, burnout. I don't care. I think they obviously do care, but what are... you know, solid business reasons that RevOpsers can bring up to actually approach their boss to get more resources.
Yeah, so when I talk about headcount, it's not just about a person that's full-time. I'm talking about just capacity overall, right? You want to increase the capacity and the capability of the org. You can do it in a couple of ways. One, you can make sure that you only prioritize and focus on the critical path, things that matter. But if you do need to expand the capacity, you can do it in a couple of ways. You can build the team internally. And to me, that's about a value use case. You often see ratios stated as a reason for why you need to increase headcount. So 25 or 30 to 1 is kind of the top end ratio that I've seen. I think Max Mader from FoundHQ has been looking at some lower ratios for some publicly traded companies, 15 or 17 to 1, like companies like Datadog. So somewhere in between. So if you're scaling up the sales team.
If I'm just interjecting, so basically it's sales headcount or is it go-to-market headcount to RevOps headcount, right? So you said 30-ish or, you know, 15, 17-ish.
Yeah, that's a sales operations metric. So for sales operations, you're looking at 20, 25 to 1. For marketing ops, I don't know a really good ratio, but it'd have to be based off of campaign execution. So the diversity of campaigns, the number of campaigns, I think that's probably the better metric to think through. Marketing ops can be a bottleneck to campaign execution. And if you're thinking of ambitious campaigns for the year, marketing operations will have to follow. So that's one way of doing it is full-time headcount. A third way is bringing in contractors. So folks on contingency, maybe you don't need a full 40 hours from one headcount. You just need 10 to 15 and you need highly concentrated, highly skilled set of hours from an individual. And so you might consider bringing in an agency. The fourth, and I think this is less popular, but I think one thing you can consider is bringing in a tool. There are tools out there that can radically reduce the amount of time from an individual. So if you have someone in RevOps calculating commissions for 20 hours, you know, every single quarter, well, I don't know what their billable rate is, but if you brought in an incentive compensation management tool, an ICM, you could probably, you know, crunch down that time significantly. So there's a number of ways to increase the capacity. It's not just bringing in headcount. But how do you make that investment case? One is, okay, well, how do we increase the frontier of operations? So what capabilities are we not bringing in today that are now taxed across other team members in the org? Finance is taking on planning or quotas when you can carve that into sales operations. Maybe the sales leader is going into the CRM. Maybe you can carve that time back. So there's a couple of ways you can think about consolidating those functions into an additional incremental headcount. Doesn't mean that the work doesn't get done. We just want to move it to the right individuals. The second way of doing it is, a compliance or a risk argument. Bringing in an operations resource helps baseline the org and prepare themselves to be ready to be compliant for any sort of audit that's going to come through. So there's like two arguments. One is a labor savings and a ROI impact, and the second is to use the compliance line.
Interesting.
I think there's also another piece here. Like now we've run through some of the things that will be broken in the go-to-market, basically, if this has not been run the right way, basically. And if there's a marketing leader or sales leader or whatever that sees some of these constraints or problems appearing, whether it's the planning that's broken or something else, that's probably also a point to say, well, it's probably not because Bob, who's doing RevOps, is doing a terrible job. It could very well be that the resources just aren't there yet. And kind of help make that case as well. Because I mean, the listeners aren't all going to be RevOps. So I actually think,
listening to this, and I think you're totally right. I mean, the parallels to a product manager are just so overwhelmingly there, right? So the thing is, right, when I talk to our, you know, small team, one product manager, it's like it's kind of a matter of fact kind of conversation. It's like, yeah, I know, Mr. CEO, you want all of these things, but you know what? Guess what? You can't have them. We don't have the resource. We can't do these things. And I think this is where RevOps is kind of junior, honestly. It's like, actually, it should be like, hey, you want all of those wonderful things? Yep, me too, but you can't have them. It doesn't work. If you want more, cool, yes. Hire more, this is how we do it, blah, 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 blah. But actually, no, you know, forget about it. These things will not happen because X, Y, and Z reason, right? And I think there's sometimes, it's not like I was great at this when I was RevOps, but it's like, our own ability to know what we can get done, I think that's kind of lacking a little bit. I think product management and so forth are getting way more scientific around this. And then maybe it's also the environment, kind of sales, marketing, and CS, kind of those product development timelines, they keep pushing out for whatever reason. I don't know why, but the quarter never does, right? And I think the pressure then therefore then on all kinds of different, even project-oriented roles like revenue operations in the GTM, they then therefore is like, well, you know, I need to hit this crazy number and that, you know, timeline isn't moving. So therefore you need to do as well, right? I think there are some of those things that are just set up in the wrong way, where I also believe we can't just push it on the leader and say like, oh, you need to be better educated. It's also us on the revenue operations side to kind of push back in a better way. And also to a degree, also mark our territory. It's like, you know what, sorry, no, can't do that. You know, you can fire me now if you want to, but that's just what it is, right? And I think kind of that, if you do that right, if you're really good at this, I think it also changes almost how people look at you. It's like, damn, you know, he's a boss.
You can only play that card so many times, though. Yeah, if it's always like, it's either this or fire me. I know which route it's going to go. Yes. I know exactly where it's going to go.
The nuclear option all the time, you know? No, I know.
So I'm at capacity. Read the sign.
So I think this was, honestly, I think this was an important conversation to have, because I think it's been very hyped up, revenue operations, and I think it's an important function, by the way. I think you need this kind of overseer across the go-to-market. I wish I had that function last time we worked together. So I think, I hope we kind of were able to pinpoint some very real pains out there.
And, maybe wrapping or opening, I'm not quite sure what I'm doing right now, but I think, if you as CRO listening or CEO, founder or something, listening to this, like, yes, you don't need masterful, artful people, you know, building your CRM and your tooling infrastructure. So there's is a very specific skill, but over-investing in this, you feel like, do we need to be the company with the best CRM setup? It's like, is that going to change things for us? And the answer is probably no. But what I think Jeff and Mikkel and I are talking about is, it's not the best CRM setup, it's actually the best go-to-market setup, right?
Yeah.
And that is a different profile. It's not the same thing. I think, you know, someone like Jeff, for example, kind of, you know, pulls that obviously off. But having a brain like this in your organization, yes, that looks at the whole thing through a data lens, obviously. Mm. I think that is the real reason why people want to have revenue operations. That's what's really, you know, moving the needle and driving the business forward, not the other piece, right? And I think this is, don't want to get into this whole strategic RevOps thing, but this is where you know, we as RevOps group kind of need to move towards, right? And kind of have clarity, hey, this is my strategic stuff where I'm impacting the business. And here's the hygiene things that have to be ticked off for me even to be in that position. Jeff, thank you so much for spending a bit of time here and enlightening our listeners on how RevOps is broken and how you can move out of that.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you. Don't worry about it.
Thanks, Jeff.
All right. Bye. Cheers, mates.